This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
And the sons of Noah who emerged from the Teva were Shem, Ham, and Yefet. The Chom were Avich and Noah, and Ham was the father of Canaan. Shlosho Eile b'nei Noah, these three were the sons of Noah. Ume Eile Noftso Chol Ha'oret, and the whole of the world developed, spread out from these three. Vayochel Noah Isho Adomo Vayitakorim, and Noah, the man of the earth, began and he planted a kerim, a vineyard. Vayesht min hayayin vayishko, and he drank from the wine and became drunk. Vayisgal b'soich oholoi, and he behaved in an exposure in his tent. And the story goes on with Ham, which we spoke about last year or the year before, but it's up till here. It's these three psukim that I'm really interested in. These four psukim. There's a sort of disparaging attitude to Noah here. Firstly, the way it refers to him, Vayachel Noah Ish Ha'adama, Noah, the man of the land, sort of Namhoret, like kind of, the man of the land. And what does he do? He builds a vineyard, and he drinks, and he gets drunk. What happened to the man Noah? We're told at the beginning of the parasha of the Noach, Ish Tzadik, Tomim, Hoyo, B'dayrosov, that Noach was a tzadik, he was a perfect man in his generation. Now, you know, nowadays you go around and every Tom, Dick, and Harry is a tzadik. But it depends who says he's a tzadik. If you go around and the ordinary man says, oh, so and so is a tzadik, it would be impressive. So and so is a tzadik, it's a little bit more impressive. If a tzaddik says so and so is a tzaddik, it's more impressive. When the Ribbono himself says of somebody, tzaddik tomim, a perfect tzaddik, what great recommendation can there be than that? There's nobody else in the whole Torah who's given that title. Nobody. Not Avraham, not Yitzchak, not Yaakov, not Yosef, not Moshe. Nobody is given that title by the Torah. Tzaddik tomim. So Noach is no ordinary man. He's a man who was exceedingly great. A man who was destined to save his whole generation and to save all of humanity. A man who was chosen for the ends of others, humanity. A man who, from whom it was decided to restart the whole of humanity, descended from Noah, was chosen to be our father. And suddenly he's rolling drunk in his tent, the same man, and he's an Isho Adom of the land. What's happened to him? And however we'll translate Isho Adom, the Medrash translates it one way, Rashi translates it slightly differently. The Medrash translates it, Lohut Acher Ha'adomo. He's very involved in the land. He pursues the land. He's a very earthy sort of man. Noach, Ish Tzadik Tomim, a perfect tzadik. Are we going to say that this is a man who goes pursuing earthy sort of things, an earthy man? What kind of an earthy man is this? And why is he called an Isha Adama now when he comes out of the ark? What was he doing all the time he was in the ark? For a year he was in the ark. What was he doing during that year? He wasn't learning Chavrusa, and he wasn't attending Shiurim, and he wasn't giving Shiurim. From morning till night, and from night till morning, 24 hours a day, the man was feeding animals and cleaning up their mess. You know, there were 8 people in the ark altogether. 8 people looking after hundreds of animals. Hundreds and hundreds of animals. And you know the quantities of food that these animals eat. And you know the quantity of the mess that they make that has to be cleaned up as well. If one keeps a little pet dog or cat, you understand, multiply that by thousands and you've only got 1,000 cats. You haven't started with elephants and giraffes and horses yet. It's no small job for 8 people to keep all those animals. Day and night they were busy. And only once did Noach, was Noach late for the lion's meal, you'll remember. And the lion gave him a clap for that. And the Torah considers that Noach deserved that clap. He had no business being late for the lion's meal. So each animal had to be fed at its time. Each different animal has a slightly different meal time. and he had to accommodate himself to each of the animals. Day and night, working. What's he working? And we complain that we start becoming, we lose our spiritual involvement when we find ourselves getting over-involved with our work. But at least, what's our work? It's dealing with people. It's buying, it's selling, it's making, it's doing, and we're involved in the real world, doing real things with real people. Noach was involved with behemoths day and night, morning and night. The chazerim there was cleaning up the pigs. That was Noach. It was his job for a year. If he was ever Isha Adama, wasn't that the time? That he was really an earthy man? Now he's come out of the ark already. Now he's a mensch again. He's got a home, a family. He can live a normal life again. Now is not the time to call him an Isha Adama. Now surely he's something much greater. What's happened that he's sort of dropped down to the level of Isha Adama? Noach was involved for a year in the most physical form of materialism possible. About it all. It was pure, messy, dirty physicality. Pure, day-to-day routine. Terrible stuff. You know, our modern ladies, bless their hearts, get a bit frustrated with the housework. One can understand it. They're intelligent and they're talented and they would like to do other things with their lives. With Noach, it wasn't even housework. It was just cleaning up the stables, day and night, in and out. One just has to appreciate what the man must have gone through for those years, for that year. Totally dedicated to feeding and cleaning up the mess of animals. Imagine such a profession. For a Talmid Chacham, for an Ish Tzadik Tomid. If you pick some farmer off the street somewhere in the Free State and you tell him that's your job, it's bad enough. Take a Noach, an Ish Tzadik Tomid. Go to Yerushalayim and pick up some Rosh Yeshiva there. And believe me, Noach was greater than any Rosh Yeshiva you'll find today. Take one Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim and say, hey, we've got a good job for you for the year. Got a whole lot of animals in this big box. Yeah, clean up their mess. That's what you'll be doing for a year. Very important job this is, you know. It's not for a Rosh Yeshiva. And this wasn't for Noach. How did he preserve his sanity? How did he preserve his spirituality during that year? And what happened that when he came out and one would expect the period of elevation, that's the time he's called Isha Adama. The answer is that the ark isn't what you think the ark was. If you make a model of the ark, you'll find two interesting things. Number one, all the animals would never fit in. Number two, the ark would never float. The ark, what saved those people, what the ark was not wood tarred together with pitch. That wasn't the ark, because that wouldn't have worked. That's not what the thing was. What the ark was sort of the embodiment of chesed. That's really what it was. It was living chesed. It was physical chesed from morning till night. Let's look at the areas in which it was chesed. Firstly, did it have to take 120 years to build this little box? It wasn't very big. 120 years to build it. He had to plant the trees especially for a whole story that he went through. 120 years it took to make this thing. Did it have to take that long? It didn't. Did Noah have to do it himself? Couldn't he have got some workmen to do it? He could have. So what's the whole thing? The first act of chesed that has to be done in a situation such as the impending disaster of the flood is to try and save the world from the flood. That's the first thing that has to be done. Not to say, well, I'm okay, I got a boat, and I'm going to get away from this, I'm alright. The first act of chesed, the first act of kindness is the understanding that although you got a boat, and you can get away, there are millions of people who don't have any boat, and they can't get away. And the only way they can be saved is by their doing tshuva, is by their changing their ways. And you, Noach, are responsible to do that. And you're going to do it with the ark. It's your doing that that's going to save you afterwards. It's not the box. The box can't float. The miracle that is going to save you is the act of chesed that you're doing, not the box that you're making. The box that you're making is only to encourage people to say, Rabbi Noach, what are you doing? That'll give you an opportunity to start talking to them. That'll give you the forum in which you can start describing to them and educating them and teaching them that there's an impending disaster. People, prophets of doom start going around, beware, there's a world war coming, that's one thing. But if I start building myself a nuclear air raid shelter in my garden, and people start asking what I'm doing, and I say, look, it's just for me, don't worry. I just happen to believe I'm going to need it shortly, but you don't have to do it. There's no reason for you to do it. That shakes people. And all of a sudden, my next door neighbor's building one too. And then one finds the whole of Sydenham, everybody's building nuclear air raid shelters. And then they hear in Yeovil, there's a new minhag in Sydenham now. They got the nuclear air raid shelters they're building over there. And all of a sudden in Yeovil, they're building nuclear air raid shelters. And then in Killarney it starts, and in Sandton it starts. All of a sudden everybody's got their nuclear air raid shelters. That's what the Rebbeinu Shlomo was hoping would happen. People would come and say, Nach, what are you doing? And he would say, Marvel, flat's coming, I'm building an ark to get out of this place. And there would be discussion, why and how, and is there anything we can do to stop it and to avoid it? Wouldn't it help them to build boats? Why didn't they build boats too? Wouldn't it help them? And surely some of them had boats? Do you think that there was only one boat in the world? No, it's a miserable crate. It wasn't the only boat in the world. There were some sophisticated liners. They didn't float during the flood. Just this miserable crate got away, this box. That's what it was. It didn't. That managed. That stood up upright. And it supported all these millions of animals that weighed tons and tons. And it landed very neatly on the mountain of Ararat. And everybody got out safely. And all the ocean liners didn't work somehow. They sank. They got messed up in the storm. They didn't survive. What it was, the ark was the embodiment. It was a monument of chesed. What was important about the ark was the building of it. Those 120 years was the most important part of it. Not its design. Its design was ridiculous. It couldn't work. What would save them is not the ark. What would save them was 120 years of building the ark. That's what would save Noah. A man who devotes 120 years to trying to get a message across to people who aren't listening, that's going to help him. Not building the box. The next thing you have to do, in terms of chesed under such a situation, is look after the people who are in the box with you. The animals that are in. So during that entire year, there wasn't a moment that Noach wasn't occupied with chesed, that he wasn't occupied with kindness. And he wasn't dealing with frum Jews, and he wasn't dealing with non-frum Jews, and he wasn't even dealing with Gentiles. He was dealing with animals. But it doesn't matter. If animals are the only people that there are, the only things that there are to whom to do chesed, do to animals. But you can't stop for a moment doing chesed, because what's going to save you from the flood is you're doing chesed. You're doing kindness is what's going to save you. It's not because you used to be an ish tzaddik tomim. That's not going to save you because you were once a tzaddik. You're not going to be saved because you're building a box, because the box can't float. You're going to be saved because of your chesed. And for that you need to do chesed for 120 years before the flood. And you have to be doing chesed at every moment during the disaster. It's not a time for you to run away and hide under the bed and say, I seem to be okay. At a time of disaster, what's going to save you is you're doing chesed, not you're looking after yourself. And the air raid shelter won't work, because the bombs are stronger. All you need is a direct hit. If you want to be saved from a direct hit, you're going to be saved by doing chesed, not by reinforcing your air raid shelter a little bit more. By saving another person and pulling another one into the air raid shelter and another one and another one, and cramping yourself up and sharing out your rations a little bit more. That's what's going to save you. Not security. That's what one has to understand, and that's what Noah had to understand. So there we found him for the whole year. The man was busy doing chesed. Day and night, morning, afternoon, evening, constantly doing chesed, feeding the animals and cleaning their mess. And we realized the competence with which he did it when we realized that the only time he slipped up was when he was late for the lion's meal. And as I said, Chazal considered the lion's objection justified. When you're trying to save yourself with chesed, that chesed has to be perfect. It has to excel. There can't be one little flaw in the chesed. And to be late for the lion's meal is already a flaw. It's not 100% perfect on those levels of chesed. It's not what's expected of us. The Rebbeinu Shlom is not going to come down with a bolt of thunder and lightning on us if we feed our cats half an hour late. That we're just not on that level. But Noach was. And Noach was trying to save himself with chesed, and in order to save himself with chesed, that chesed had to be perfect. Absolutely perfect. And any slip up could have been disaster. And the chesed goes still further. Sometimes it's chesed by commission, and sometimes it's even chesed by omission. He's done chesed with the people before the flood. He's done chesed with those who are in the ark. What about chesed with those who are drowning outside? Save them, you can't. But that doesn't mean that you have to get onto the yacht and as you're sailing away, watching everybody else drowning, drink a l'chaim with your family. That's not. And so they're told very delicately when they're told to get into the ark, they go, "Vayavoy Noach uvonov v'ishtoy u'neshei vonov itoy elatevo." And Noach and his sons and his wife and his daughters-in-law came into the ark. And that's a funny order, because the order when they come out of the ark is different. Noach and his sons and his wife and his daughter-in-law. Says Rashi, there was a mechitza in the ark. Ha'anoshim levad va'anoshim levad. Men separately and women separately. First Noach and his sons, and then his wife and his daughters-in-law. Why? The fishenes were betashmish hamita, because they were forbidden to have any form of sexual contact during that whole year in the ark. Why? Because the ark was such a holy place. Because the kedusha of the ark? No. Mipnei shehaolam shorui betzaah, because the world is suffering. At a time when the world is suffering, you don't just carry on living normally. The world is suffering, you're jolly lucky to be saved, but that's all. Don't live in luxury while other people are suffering. Don't live in complete comfort and normality. Cut down your own level of existence and your own level of enjoyment of life when the rest of the world is busy suffering. And that too was chesed. So at every moment they were occupied in chesed, the way they lived was kindness. It was an identification. So there was a mechitza, men and women separately. What's going on here? Why a mechitza? Mechitza is because everybody else is busy dying. And we consider it a pleasure to be together with our families. And we're not here for our pleasure. We're here to be saved and we're here to do a job of work. We're here to save the animals. And we're all busy. The men are busy and the women are busy and we're busy in our own wives and we're just ways and we're sorry. Family life is suffering for the year. That's just tough luck. We're jolly lucky to be here all together. We're not going to indulge in normal family life while there are people dying outside. And which people were they? Not from Jews. And not non-from Jews. Goyim. And not even just Goyim. Wicked, out and out, corrupt, degenerate people. People who had nothing to go for them. Normally, if God finds that there's something within a human being, some form of salvation, He won't wipe him out. Certainly wouldn't wipe out a whole nation, a whole race. The whole of humanity. Wipes out the whole of humanity. You know, you've got a case of Sodom, and you've got a case here of the flood. It's happened very seldom that God has written off everybody. So they were real nobodies. They were the real bottom of the barrel, corrupt through and through. And yet Noach and his family were restrained from family relationships out of identification with the tsar that the world is going through, with the pain and the suffering that the world is going through. You can't sit in your own little idyllic world just because you happen to be isolated from it while the rest of the world is suffering. If the rest of the world is suffering, you have to tone down a little bit too. It's just derech eretz. It's just the way one operates. It's a method of sympathizing. It's a method of expressing a feeling. That's just the way one operates. It's not menschlich to carry on normally when everybody else is living abnormally. And so we find that Noach is occupied totally from 120 years before, with chesed. By omission and by commission, by living separately from the women folk and by attending to the animals. Every minute of the day, chesed, chesed, chesed. So what kept that ark afloat on those stormy waters? Not its design, and not the extent to which it was waterproof. Nothing. What kept that ark floating was the chesed that was going on inside it, that's all. That's what kept it going. And we have here an amazing concept, which I might dwell on sometime in the future, of the extent to which a physical thing can actually be changed and elevated, and the laws of nature can be changed by the extent to which the thing operates for chesed, for kindness. But one thing we see for sure, what is it that made the ark so spiritual? What is it that gave the ark that kedusha? What is it that made that ark able to float? What is it that saved those people? Not some mystical miracle. Fact. Chesed. That's what did it. And one has to understand that that's the beginning of it all. One talks about holiness and kedusha and all these wonderful ideas. They're all wonderful. They start with chesed. Without chesed, there's nothing going on. One sees this expressed fantastically in two chazal. I'm just going to get Gemara Yuma there. And if you could get it open on that Lamed Ches, meanwhile I'll get busy with the other one. Says the Gemara in Menachos Daf Tzadi Zayin, Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayim Mizbeach Mechaper Al Odom. We were very lucky when the Beis HaMikdash used to be around, things used to be a lot easier. Because when one wanted atonement, one used to acquire atonement at the altar, at the Mizbeach. One could bring a sacrifice, one could bring a korban, one had to do tshuva and all the rest of it, but at least one knew there was a mechanism to achieve atonement, there was a mechanism to achieve tshuva at the altar, with a sacrifice. However that worked. V'akshav, she'en Beis HaMikdash Kayim. And now, that is no Beis HaMikdash. What have we got to replace that Mizbeach? Because without it we're lost, we're constantly doing wrong. We're constantly letting ourselves down and letting the Ribbono Shel Olam let them down. What can we do to go? Is there anything that we can do to somehow justify our existences? Answers the Gemara. Shulchono Shel Olam Mechaper Olam. A man's table works today like the Mizbeach used to work, like the altar used to work. Our tables have Kedusha like the Mizbeach, it has holiness like the Mizbeach. And that's why we put salt on our bread. Same as they used to put salt on the altar. We do it to remind ourselves that we're sitting at a sacrifice. We're sitting at a mizbeach. We're not just sitting at a dining table. It's not just some kind of party that we're having. We're actually sitting as if at the Beis HaMikdash, sitting at a mizbeach. That's a wonderful concept all on its own. It's something we've spoken about before, what a meal is. You know, the Kohanim never went through the same existential problems that our women folk go through. When the Kohanim used to cook up a mizbeach, a korban, they didn't sit and demand Kohen's lib and the rights to go out and work like the ordinary Israeli. They clamored for it. What was there greater to do than to prepare a korban? They clamored, and every Yisrael was jealous of the Kohen. I have to go out and work, and he sits in the Beis HaMikdash and brings korbanos. He believes such an idyllic existence. Sits in the Beis HaMikdash and is constantly occupied with kedusha, constantly occupied with holiness and with holy things and with tahara. He doesn't move out of there. What a beautiful existence! And the Kohanim used to know it. And you remember, those of you who were with me when we were learning Mishnah Yuma, the way they used to have to fight over various jobs to be done, and it made no difference how menial the job was. Everybody wanted to do it, and the more difficult the job was, the more they wanted to do it. And they had to draw lots because everybody wanted to do it. It was never a problem finding volunteers in the Beis HaMikdash to bring a korban. What greater thing was there than to bring a korban? Those of you who haven't studied yet what a korban is will find it a little bit difficult to appreciate. But there isn't anything greater than bringing a korban. And yet our women folk are bringing korbanos. Today the shulchan, the table, is the mizbeach. And when they're cooking up a roast, they're doing what the kohanim were doing in the Beis HaMikdash. They're preparing a korban. And when they're setting the table and laying the table and dishing up the food, they're serving in the Beis HaMikdash at the Mizbeach. There is no less kedusha in many ways to that than to what went on in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. A Yom Kippur Avodah. When a Kohen used to go to the mikveh, how many times before he used to actually come to the Mizbeach and wash his hands and feet from the kiyur and over again and prepare his mind and prepare his thoughts for this wonderful thing which he was about to do, and the special clothes he used to wear for the occasion. And our women find it a chore. It's hard. It's a nuisance. It's a korban. It's a mizbeach. Perhaps the problem is that our tables aren't as a mizbeach should be, and that they don't feel that. But why is the table? What has happened to convert the table into a mizbeach? And what is it, some kind of magic? Now all of a sudden, table for table, read altar. Magic. All very nice. All beautiful. What is it that does it? How do you change an ordinary table into a mizbeach? And you've got to picture the whole mizbeach. If you've learned a little bit about korbanos, when you come and sit at your table, you've got to picture the whole thing. And that's why we wash before the meal. And that's why we approach a meal the way we do, as I said, with the salt and with everything. It's to understand that this is a korban. But what is it that does it? Is it some mystical thing that's happened? Is it the bracha we say? Is it the motzi and the benching which does it? No. Says Rashi. Shulchono shel odom mechaper olov. A man's table does the kapora. The noisein pruso leoni. Because he has poor people at his table. That's what does it. And poor people doesn't necessarily mean people who've got no money. An oni in the Torah means a person who has a need. He might have a need for food. He might have a need for a place for a Shabbos meal. He's got plenty of food at home, but there's no Shabbos at home. He needs to be a Shabbos with people. He might need company. He might need conversation. Makes no difference what he needs. Where you're talking about a man who has a need, that's an oni. What converts your table into a mizbeach is the fact that you have a niyim at your table. That it's kuli chesed, that it's all chesed. That's what does it. Chesed is the only thing which has the power of taking something physical and converting it into something spiritual. You can be cleaning up the mess of an elephant, but if it's an act of chesed, it's an act of spirituality. And you can be standing in shul and davening in Yom Kippur, and if there's no chesed in that action, there's no spirituality in that action. If you're davening for yourself on Yom Kippur, you would be better off cleaning the mess of an elephant, because there's some chesed at least. If you're completely self-involved and self-absorbed, it makes no difference. Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash, it's not worth anything. The only thing that really has the power to convert something physical into something spiritual is the power of chesed. It's the fact that you have a person in need at your table that can convert your table into something spiritually meaningful. Not all the brochas, and not sprinkling salt all over the place, and not washing your hands a million times, and not even drying them very carefully. That's not what's going to make your table spiritual. You do all that because your table is spiritual, but what makes your table spiritual is the fact that you have at your table people who need to be there. By the way, your own children fall into that category. After the age of 5, one is not under a legal obligation to support one's children. At that point, it's already an act of tzedakah. So one finds that in a normal Jewish household, there's a lot of chesed that goes on in any event, just within the family. How much more so when it's a family which is hospitable? How much more so when it's a family who is on the outlook, on the lookout for aniyim, for people who are a little miserable, for people who need a little bit of support? And when you're looking for people to have at your table or in your home, don't look for people only whose company you enjoy. That's not what we're talking about. Those aren't aniyim. That's your own entertainment. You're welcome to have such people, but that's not hachnosas orchim. Hachnosas orchim is people you don't enjoy having. They need it. That's why they're there. Not because you want them. Not because you find it entertaining to have them. That's fine. To have somebody entertaining is good, but that's not what we're talking about. That's not what makes a table into something spiritual. What makes a table into something spiritual is because a guy needs to be there, and he is there, you found him, and you've got him at your table. That's what converts it to a mizbeach and gives it all the power that a mizbeach has. And there is no object, there is no chetzah, there is no object in the world of Yiddishkeit that has the power of a mizbeach, that has the power of an altar. A power for kapora, for atonement, for bringing one close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, there is nothing. And what's compared to the mizbeach? Your own table. If there's an oni there. If the table is primarily used, not just to fill your stomach, but as a forum in which to support people who need it. Doesn't mean that at every meal you've got an oni. But when you're going to the furniture shop to choose a table, if you say to yourself, well, there are four of us in the family room, maybe one or two extra, so a six-seater is what we need. That table is no mizbeach. That's it. Yeah, you're looking for a furniture for in the furniture shop. You say, well, we're a family of four. We need at least 10. Well, doesn't mean that there'll always be 10, but that's what the table for. It's not just for us four. Table is for anybody who needs it, so we need a big place. You're looking for a house, and you say, nice television room here, and there's a nice garage. Two garages, fantastic. And a swimming pool, beautiful. Is the swimming pool nice and private that nobody can get to it? Yes, that's excellent. Lovely. And a lounge, that's all right, and everything's fine, and big bedroom, no, the bedroom's not quite big enough that we can extend it. It'd be a multi-big, real, fancy, huge bedroom. And the kids' bedrooms, everything's fine. The dining room's a bit small, but it doesn't matter, our table will fit in. That's not a Jewish home. Jewish home is first place. Let me have a look at the dining room. How can a Jew live in a place like this, with a dining room like this? Where am I going to put everybody? And the estate agents will say, well, how many people do you have in your family? You don't understand. It's not just my family, but we entertain. So don't worry, when you entertain, you don't have to entertain in a dining room, you can do this. You don't understand, I entertain constantly. Just constantly, every meal. Not every meal, but you never know. That's how a Jewish person would answer. Can be, who knows, whenever anybody needs, that's when they'll be there. That's a Jewish home. That's how a Jewish person's home, that's how he buys a table. When he goes out to buy a set of crockery, he doesn't figure out, no, six of us, so we should take a set of a dozen because some start breaking. Six of us, so we need at least two dozen. I can't afford two dozen. So we'll buy a cheaper set. Rather two dozen of a cheaper set than one dozen of a very fancy set, which you'd never take out. It's in the showcase. What's in the showcase for? One day maybe the king and queen will come and eat by us and we'll take it out. That's what it's for. A dinner service is meant to be used, and it's meant to be used by lots of people, lots of times. And it doesn't make much difference to the taste of the food how good the dinner service is. Very nice to eat off a nice dinner service if you can afford it, but don't compromise on your achnasas ochim because you want something very pretty. More important to have the visitors there eating off ordinary plates than have no visitors on the beautiful plates in the cupboard. They're there to serve the visitors. They're there to serve the ochim, and they're ochim who need to be there, not ochim who you enjoy entertaining. There's another beautiful story in the Gemara. Let's see if I can just find it very quickly. At the time that they were building the Beis HaMikdash, different people donated different objects. And there's some beautiful Mishnayos and Gemara describing the things that were donated to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara, the Mishnah just says, Niknu natu nisim ledal toisav. Niknu, miracles happen to his doors. What's the story about Niknu's doors? My nisim nasu lezad loisav. Ask the Gemara in Yomei Daf Lamed Ches, what are the miracles that happened to Niknu's doors? This sounds very fascinating. What's the story? Amru kisheholach Niknu lahavi dlatos me'Alexandria, shel Mitzrayim. Niknu decided he was going to donate the doors to the Beis HaMikdash, but not ordinary doors, imported doors. And not imported from anywhere. He knew a particular pair of doors made from bronze or copper or something heavy like that in Alexandria. And he was going to go and fetch them. Not, he wasn't going to phone up some import agent and ask for them to be shipped over. He was going to do it himself, and he was going to bring them to the Beis HaMikdash. And he went off Bechaziro, so on the way back in the ship, Omo Dalav Nafsho Shebiyam, the tavern. A terrible storm in the sea hit the ship, and it wasn't going to make it. And there were people in the ship, and there were these two massive doors, and it just wasn't going to work. Not lachas mehem v'itzilu aliyam. They decided one door has to go overboard. So poor Niknu, he's been waiting and he's been organizing. Can you imagine what went into getting these two doors? What's it going to look like, one door in the Beis HaMikdash? It's one of these big, huge gates, and the two doors fitted in exactly. So it's going to have one. Can you imagine that, but the other one's under the sea? What can you do? The ship has to be saved, so they throw one gate over. V'adayin lo nachayam mizafur, and the sea still didn't stop. Bikshu lahatil et chaverta. They decided to throw the other door over as well. No choice. Omad hu uvekarcho. He got up and he hugged this door. He threw himself on the gate. Omarehem hatiluni imo. Says, you're welcome to throw the door into the water, but you throw me with it. We're not parting. This door you were not parting with. Miyad nachayam mizafu. Immediately the storm eased. The moment he showed that Mesiris Nefesh over the door, the storm had eased. Vaya mitzpayer al chaverta, and he was worried about the friend, the other door, all the time. Can you imagine? Imagine the situation that you go, the ladies might appreciate that, there's a fantastic set of diamond earrings going in Paris, just one. And you can manage to get hold of them. And you schlep over there and you go and you find them, on the way back you lose one. You know what it is? There's no way it can be replaced. There you got your one earring. You can never use it. It's terrible. It's the most horrible thing. So there he is on the ship with his one door, knowing that his other door is so and so many fathoms down under the Mediterranean. Kivan shiyigiel in the mala shel Akor, when he came to Akor, hoysa mevatvetses v'yotzes mitachas b'efnasina. They saw the door floating under the ship. And there they pulled the second door and they had both doors there. Next time you go to Akko, just remember about the doors of Nikna, and you'll appreciate Akko even more. But thanks. Again, you see an example of, it's interesting that it's the same example, floating on the water. That copper or whatever it was, bronze, which had no right to be floating on the water, what caused it to float? Just the Mesiras Nefesh for Chesed. He wasn't bringing it to his own house. He wasn't doing this for himself. This was for the Beis Hamikdash. This was for Klal Yisrael. He was doing this for the entire Jewish people. And he was most nefesh. He was prepared to kill himself for the sake of giving this to the Jewish people. And that gave the bronze door the ability to float. It actually turned something physical into something much more spiritual. Here we've got again that same concept. And what is it that can turn something physical into something spiritual? Mesiras Nefesh for Chesed. Being prepared to make sacrifices for Chesed, that's the only thing. It's no hocus pocus or no. Nothing like that in Yiddishkeit. When you're converting something physical into something spiritual, it's Chesed which can do it. Nothing else can do it, only Chesed can do it. And Chesed can do it. It's kindness to use a physical thing for an act of chesed and to use it selflessly. Convert the whole thing into something spiritual. When a home is being used primarily for chesed, doesn't mean that you've got people in the home all day and all night, because one can't live like that. And some people can afford to entertain people more than others. It depends on one's makeup. Some people can handle visitors every day and some people just can't. It doesn't matter. But as long as primarily the function of my home is to contribute, not to hide him, then one's whole home becomes converted into something spiritual. And it just operates on a different function. The bricks and the wood from which it's made actually changes. Like the doors of Niknu and like the table which becomes a Mizbech, provided it's there for Chesed. So when Noach was involved in his ark, that was Chesed. And the ark floated the same way as the doors of Niknu floated. Against all the laws of physics, it was the laws of Chesed that enabled that ark to float. It was the laws of Chesed that enabled those doors to float. So what went wrong with Noach when he came out? So we now understand that for a year he could be feeding animals and cleaning up their mess and not go through any kind of existential crisis. On the contrary, feeling himself very fulfilled and understanding that it is the feeding of the animals and the cleaning of the mess which is in fact saving him at that very moment. That if he would stop for a moment, his box would sink. That he was able to understand. That's the fuel that's keeping him going. You know, in our own lives, by the way, one shudders to think what would happen to us if we stopped doing chesed. Luckily, most people do a lot of chesed. In their own families, with their own families, with friends, in their businesses, in their work, they're constantly doing chesed. Not enough, not as much as they could be, and who knows what could be achieved if they were doing a little bit more, but can you imagine what would happen, Chas v'Sholom, if we stopped doing Chesed? I don't know if anything would continue to exist. Probably the only thing which keeps the world going, both us as individuals and the world as a whole, is the Chesed which is being done, just willy-nilly, by the way people are relating to one another. And I think also one has to understand that a place like a Beis HaMedrash is not a physical building that's put up as a structure to do some kind of thing or another. A Beis HaMedrash that isn't functioning in this line, that has no Kedusha, that has no holiness to it. What makes a place holy, what gives it Kedusha, is the level of activity of Chesed. That's what determines it. Not how much learning there is, how much teaching there is. Not how much learning there is, how much helping there is. Not how much achieving there is, how much assisting there is, how much contributing there is. That's what gives the place its atmosphere of Kedusha. Not just a physical place into which one comes for some kind of refuge or entertainment. Noach comes out. Vayachil Noach Ish HaAdomo. And Noach, it's a difficult sentence to translate. Firstly, the word Vayachil. According to some, it means he began, the way I translated it the first time. According to the Medrash and to Rashi, Vayachil means he became secular. What does it mean? Noach became secular. For a year in the ark, feeding animals and cleaning their mess, he wasn't secular. That was holy. Now he comes out and he plants a vineyard and he's secular all of a sudden. What's more secular about planting vineyards than feeding animals? difficult to translate it altogether. Vayachal Noach Ish Adamah, Noach the man of the land started, Vayitakarim, and he planted a vineyard. Why did he plant a vineyard? There's no question, as the Malbim says, he planted a vineyard so that people should have grapes and wine. He didn't do it for himself. He did it as an act of chesed. There's no question about that. Man starts re-establishing humanity, re-establishing farms and orchards and so that humanity can carry on living and get back to a normal life as quickly as possible. What greater act of chesed could there be? On the other hand, there's a strange midrash. The midrash says, Omer Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, boy b'yom nizbazeh. It was the same day that he planted the vineyard, the same day that he drank the wine, and the same day was he disgraced in his tent. Says the Ibn Ezra, that obviously can't be taken literally. It takes a bit of time for a vineyard to grow, and it takes a bit of time to make wine from grapes. And the Ibn Ezra doesn't go into any details. He just says, obviously that can't be taken literally, but there's a very deep principle behind it, behind this medrash. The Abarbanel explains what the medrash means. And the Abarbanel says, don't think it took Noah 5 years to degenerate down to that point where he was in the tent. It's true it took time for that to happen. The vineyard had to grow, and the grapes had to mature, and the wine had to mature, and the barrels before the vineyard. It was as if on that same day he was disgraced because he did it with the intention of drinking. So what, he planted the vineyard to get drunk now? I think what it means is that sure, he planted the vineyard as an act of chesed, but the Midrash criticizes him and says, ask the Midrash, could he find nothing else to plant there to make the world better? That's all he could find. The vineyard is all he could find to plant. It's also a strange criticism. You need wine for Kiddush, you need wine for the Korbanos, and one needs wine. What's so terrible about planting a vineyard? I think the criticism is leveled against him on Vayachin, that the vineyard came first. He must have gone into his office that morning and said, right, boys, what do we do to get the world straight? And I said, ooh, there's a fortune. Whole pile of things. Let's go through them. Well, you've got to plant wheat, and you've got to plant oranges, and you've got to plant lemons, and you've got to plant lulavim, and you've got to plant esrogim, and you've got to this, and that, a whole thing, and vineyards, and so on, and so on. And I said, right, let's start. First we'll do the vineyard, then we'll do this, then we'll do that. But everything will be done, and quickly. There's no question that he didn't spend months and months building a vineyard and then started planting wheat. It's probably on the same day. Just the very first one he did was the vineyard. Says the Abarbanel, he was probably sick of water also. You know, for a year of water everywhere and plenty to drink and nothing else to drink but water. Then comes and says, look, first thing I'm doing is making sure that if not now, but at least by next Simchas Torah, there's something else to drink apart from water. That at least I must have. So let's get the vineyard going. Not that he wanted to drink. One has to understand, Noach again was an ish tzaddik tomim. This man was incredibly great. It wasn't that he wanted a glass of wine. But just in his order of things, they crept in. Let me put it to you this way. When you're doing chesed, the art of doing chesed and the nisoyon of doing chesed, the trial of chesed, is to do what he needs, not what you want or what he wants. The responsibility of doing chesed is to figure out what he needs, not what he wants. There's no kindness in giving people what they want. That's not an act of kindness. Who says they must get what they want? Who says what they want is good? You can kill a person by giving him what he wants. And if you're the giver, it's your responsibility, if you're doing it as an act of chesed, to give him what he needs, not what he wants. And you've got to figure out what he needs. And that's one of the most difficult things in chesed. Number one, being sure that it's not what you want, that it's for him. And number two, that it's what he needs and not what he wants. Noach was building a vineyard for chesed. He was building a vineyard because the world needs wine. And he was building many other things apart from a vineyard. A vineyard was just one of the things. But in the vineyard, there was a little tiny touch on a very deep subconscious level of, wouldn't it be nice to have a glass of wine again? Just that. And that deep subconscious touch was enough that the very first thing he started doing was the vineyard. It didn't make any practical difference. He planted the vineyard and he went straight on to planting the wheat and onto the other things. Surely he didn't waste any time on the vineyard. But the thing which was kaveh, the thing which brought that about, that the first one he did was the vineyard, was just a touch of, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a glass of wine again? And when you're busy doing chesed, the word I has to be out. It's just banned. There's just no such thing as the word I when you're busy doing chesed. And that's the nisoyon of chesed. What happened here was that Noach allowed for one moment, in a very innocuous sort of way, in a very unimportant sort of way, he allowed the word I to creep in. I'm doing chesed, I'm doing kindness, I'm doing it for the world, I'm not doing it for myself. I've lived without wine for a year, I'll live without wine for another few years. It's not terribly important, but that would be nice. I would like a glass of wine one day. That I would like already distorts the whole application of the principles of chesed. Because once that I would like, then your whole order of preference is wrong. Why is the first thing you're doing a vineyard? A vineyard's a luxury. That's the last thing you do. First you get the wheat growing, you get the essentials, the vineyard comes last. And that he missed by the insertion of the word I. So why is he called an Isha Adama? Is that a reason to call him an Amoritz? Is that a reason to call him a man of the land? Oh, a man of the land. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, these tape recorders seem to be getting babies. They seem to be multiplying. Sorry? Chesed, yeah. God says, so to say to Noach, Noach, lo yalecha lilmoid me Adam harishon. Why didn't you learn from Adam? Isho Adomo. That's what God is hinting. Learn your lesson from Adam. Shelo yigorem lo yalo yayin. Wine is what caused him all the problems. This Gemara goes according to the version that the forbidden fruit was grapes, was wine. So there's the Gemara. What God says to Noach is, why didn't you learn from Adam, Ishu Adam. What does that mean? This is one more medrash which I'll do with you. The medrash in Bereshis. When man was being created, Omer, this is in Yud Zayin in Bereshis Rabbah, Omer Rav, Acha, Beshvolchud Livroi, says to Adam, when God came to create man, Nimlach v'malachei ha'shores, as an act of courtesy, he discussed it with his angels. He said to them, let's make a man. They said to him, define, what do you mean by man? What kind of man do you want? So he said to them, he answered them the way they deserve to be answered. He's just asking the angels as an act of courtesy. He doesn't need their permission. It's an act of courtesy. I would like to make a man. Like a rabbi told me recently, you know, he got a new position and he started it. So his job is obviously to start teaching and acting. First thing he started instituting a shiur on a Shabbos afternoon. But Rabbi said, what right did you have to start this without consulting with us? So the malachim are the same, you know? He's creating men with consultation. So I said, malachim, let's have a meeting. What's the meaning? I want to create a man, says the Ribbono Shel to the Malachim. The chutzpah, the Malachim, so to say. So, hey, this man, tell us a little bit more about him. What are you planning exactly? They take it very seriously, this committee meeting, you see. As if the opinion is really going to matter much. So the Ribbono Shel says, you want to know their definition? They're a good side cleverer than you. I'm planning to make something better than you. Cleverer than you. He brought animals before them. Vesachaya, Vesa'ov, wild animals, birds. Omar Luhu, he said to the angels, Zeh Mashmoy, what is defying this thing, this cow? Tell me what it is. V'lai Yu Yodim, I didn't know. Heviron Lifnei Odom, he brought Odom. And he passed these animals before Odom. Omar Luhu, Zeh Mashmoy, he said, what is this? Omar Luhu, Zeh Shor, that is a shor, it's an ox. Zeh Chamor, Zeh Sus, Zeh Gomal. And so, bearing in mind that in Hebrew, a noun is not just a word which is chosen to connotate a particular object, but a noun actually defines the essential qualities of that object. Each noun is a careful definition of what the object is in its essence. And when Adam gave names to all the animals, he classified them according to their absolute essences. Va'atul ma'ashimcho. And they said to him, okay, so what's your, what are you? Who are you? Amalei ani noe lekarei Adam. Says Adam, I think I should be called Adam. Shenivreiti min ha'adam, because I'm made from the earth. Asks God, Va'ani Mashmi? Okay, let's see. What's my name? Tell me who I am. says, Adam, you, I think we should call the Karois Adoshim. Call you God. Shata Adoim lechol b'yosecha, because you're the master of everything. Let's call you master. We'll call you God. But this Tani, someone calls God because that's his essence. He's master of everything. So one calls him Adoim Kol, one calls him Adoshim. And the Shoyer and the Chamor, each one is given a definition of his essence. Adam about himself, what's the definition of his essence? Mina Adam and Yivrei, are made from the earth. Is that the definition of a man? Is that the most outstanding quality of a human being that he's created from the earth? Or is his most outstanding qualities that he's Chacham Yosef Mimchem, that he's more clever than you angels? Is his quality that he's Vatachatzreyu Me'asme Elohim, that he's a little bit less than God himself? Surely that's the essence of a human being? Says Adam, no. The end of it, the human being has to know that min ha'adom nivra, he's made from the earth. And he is subject to the normal gravitational pulls of the earth and to the normal frictions of the earth. And as great as he can climb, let him never think that he's in orbit. And he just goes around on his own kind of momentum. At any time, no matter how high you are, just imagine a rocket going upright. Those engines fail for one moment. You can't say, no, it doesn't matter. Taken 5 minutes to get up there. The engines are only going to fail for half a minute, so he'll come down one tenth of where he was up to, and then he'll carry on going up again. The engines fail for half a minute, you're down back on the ground where you started, and in much more of a mess than you started. You're destroyed. And that's what it is, min ha'adom nivresi. Man has to know that he's subject to the pulls of gravity. That you can work for years and years and years to achieve spiritual stature, and your engines have to stop for one moment. And you're right back to the bottom, down to the earth, smashed into pieces. You can't just take a rest and say, well, I'm up to 20,000 feet, let me stop here for a while and breathe, and then we'll go further. It doesn't work like that. Stop and breathe and you're done. It's just constant. Climb, 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 otherwise it's full. There's a constant gravitational pull. Min ha'adom nivresi, we're created from the earth. It says God to Noach, Vayachel Noach, Ish Ha'adom, and Noach, why didn't you remember like Adam, that you're an Adam after all, you're an Ish Ha'adom, you're made from the earth. Why didn't you realize that? What happens when you're made from the earth? As long as you're doing chesed, you're moving up. As long as you're outwardly active, as long as you're contributing, you're moving up. The moment you're inward, the moment you're taking, that's when your engines are turned off. And if you take for half a second, you're done. It's not that you're just stagnant. For half a second, that whole climb stops and you fall down to the earth. Min ha'adom nivresa. Remember that you're an Ish ha'adom. Your pull is to the earth. Noach, why didn't you question yourself? When you decided what to do first that day, why didn't you ask yourself, why am I planting the grapes first? Because I think that's an act of chesed. True, I'm planting grapes because the world needs grapes. But why grapes first? Because, wouldn't a glass of wine be nice? Be nice for who? For you. You're missing your wine. You've had water for a year and nothing else. Understand that. You're entitled to miss your wine. But that can't creep into your acts of chesed. And if that does creep into your acts of chesed are losing something. There's a certain deterioration in the act of chesed. And that really is the story of Vayachel. And then one understands that the word Vayachel, both interpretations are right. It means he began, and it means he became secular. When do you become secular? When I come before my function. When I come before my calling. Every human being has a calling. He has a contribution to make. Different contributions. Each human being has to find his own area of contribution. But there's nobody in this world who doesn't have a contribution to make. As long as your contribution is coming before you, you're involved in Kedusha. The moment you come before your contribution, you're involved in secularity. And you can be cleaning the mess of an elephant, it doesn't matter. If you're doing that because that's your calling and you're doing it with Mesiras Nefesh, that's Kedusha. You can be eating, you can be shoving food into your stomach. But if you're doing it as part of a meal where there are other people present who need you or your conversation or your food, and just one of the aspects is the fact that you're eating as well, but that's not the main thing. The main thing is that you're feeding, not eating. Then that very act of eating, what more disgusting act of materialism is there than opening your mouth and shoving food into it? What more primitive action is there than that? There's nothing that a human being does in his whole life that is more disgustingly primitive than eating. And yet that very eating can be an act of kedusha where your table becomes a mizbeach. Why? Because it's an act of giving, not an act of taking. Because there's chesed involved there. It's not just taking. Where there's chesed, there can be spirituality. And so with everything one does, as long as one's involved in a contribution, and one's primary efforts are towards the contribution, that doesn't mean one's contributing every moment of the day. You have to earn money in order to give money. You have to cook food in order to serve food. You have to learn in order to teach. There are many times when you have to fill your own basket in order to be able to contribute. But if your basic motivation in filling your basket is in order to contribute, then you're involved in Kedusha, whether you're cleaning an elephant's mess or you're bringing a sacrifice in Yerushalayim. That makes no difference. What you're doing is an act of Kedusha. And if you're involved in yourself, if you're missing that glass of wine, whatever that glass of wine is, it makes no difference. If it's just, I would like, or wouldn't it be nice if I could get, if that starts becoming a factor, then you can be bringing sacrifices in Yerushalayim, it makes no difference. That's secular, that's not Kedusha. The essence of Kedusha is Mesilus Nefesh, for making a contribution, being prepared to put your head on the block for assisting, for helping, for saving, for sympathizing, for empathizing, for doing something for the world, not just doing something for yourself. One has to be careful that one finds the right framework in which to do it, and that one does it in the right way, and that one doesn't dissipate oneself in doing things which one thinks is chesed and ends up not being chesed. That's a different problem altogether. But in essence and in principle, one has to be sure that what one is doing is chesed. And therefore, provided one's life has that element to it, never think that what you're doing is unimportant. If you're earning a living, however it is, like we discussed last night, whether you're making screws or you're making plastic disposable containers, or you're cleaning the mess of elephants, it makes no difference. I don't know why I'm picking on an elephant, because they probably make a big mess. But the whatever it is that you're doing, if you're basically doing it in order to make yourself more potent in the world, then there's kedusha in the very doing of it. One has to understand that the feeling of wealth, Eric Fromm says very correctly, is the feeling of spending money, not having money. And if you're earning money in order to be able to spend it correctly and to spend it wisely and to spend it in a contributory fashion, contributing to your family, contributing to your friends, contributing to your community, contributing to your society, contributing to the world, then the earning of that money is also an act of kedusha. And if you're busy cooking in the kitchen in order to feed others, that's an act of kedusha. If you're cooking in the kitchen because you're hungry, there's no kedusha in that at all. Unless, there again, you're hungry but you want to eat, not in order just that you can have something in your stomach, but that you can have the strength to carry on contributing in other areas. That's also good. So you can have a woman who doesn't see her life job as being a cook. She does other acts of chesed, but she needs to satisfy herself too, so she has to cook a meal in order to have something to eat. That has kedusha too. And if she's not contributing in other areas, if her only area of contribution is feeding the family and the friends, the aniyim, the people who need, she's doing like the kohanim used to do in the Beis HaMikdash. And if you're making the beds or you're cleaning the floor, it makes no difference. If you're doing it in order to be potent, if you're doing it in order to contribute, what you're doing is holy. If you're doing it for yourself, what you're doing is secular. And it's really a very, almost frighteningly oversimplified, but emes. That's where it all starts. There's nothing mystical about making the physical into spiritual. You can take those bronze doors and you can take your own table. That those are very physical things, and they can be converted into things with spiritual power merely by chesed and only by chesed. That's something towards which one has to strive in one's family, in one's home, in one's work life, and certainly, I say again, in a Beis HaMedrash life. That a Beis HaMedrash becomes a place of vital chesed doing, not a place of schlepping, not a place of taking, a place of vital chesed doing, one with another and so on. But that's the atmosphere which is created, that when you come into a Beis HaMedrash, what you feel is chesed. Then you're on to kedusha. Then you're on to holiness. It's not like lahavdil by the Catholics or any other religion. Their feeling of holiness is created by massive structures, with stained glass windows and organs playing in the background and incense burning, and you're supposed to feel kedusha by that. I don't know how, but one's supposed to. That's not how we feel kedusha. Come into a place and you feel chesed, that's kedusha. It doesn't matter, it can be a ramshackle old place, it doesn't matter. No organ playing, no incense burning, it makes no difference. The atmosphere of chesed is the atmosphere of kedusha. Come into a place, no matter how magnificent it is, if from a chesed point of view it's stagnant, then from a Kedusha point of view, it's stagnant. One has to be very careful to ensure that one's understanding of Kedusha and one's living of Kedusha is an accurate Torah one.